Pulp Cereal is a new company that loves movie serials and pulp fiction works alike. On their website, they offer feature films, TV shows, and serials, along with articles that celebrate this underappreciated genre. Best of all, it's free. So if you're a fan of Saturday matinee serials like me, or you want to learn more about this part of film history, visit Pulp Cereal, C-E-R-E-A-L, pulpcerealfilms.com to enjoy hours of entertainment. You could start off with Flash Gordon Conquers the Universe and have a great time. That's Pulp Cereal, C-E-R-E-A-L, films.com. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies, and we are coming from a strange little space in a wonderful city.
The intervention room.
Yes.
At the SCAD Savannah Library.
Yes.
Where they definitely, I want that horrible song that always plays in the credits of the intervention show. You don't know. You don't watch intervention.
No, I don't watch
it's a great show.
Basically, we're here at the Savannah Film Festival, hosted by SCAD, which is the Savannah College of Art and Design, and we are with Chloe, a Grace, a Moretz.
Oh,
and it's terribly exciting.
Who is, in fact, a Georgia girl.
Mm-hmm. I am. Born and raised. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, but grew up in Cartersville, Georgia, and Rome, Georgia. My mom and all of our, I think, we go back like 6 or 7 generations in Georgia.
Oh, my.
Yeah, long time.
That's serious.
It's our entire life.
Well, yeah.
It's all of us.
It's peach in your heart. I fully understand.
100%. 100%.
We were talking about the fact that it's really wild. We spoke to Michael Ungerano the other day.
Uh-huh.
I adore him. I've been a fan of his forever.
Right.
It's crazy when you guys start so young because you're only 21 now.
Mm-hmm.
But you've worked for 15 years?
Yeah,
that's 15 crazy.
Years. I know. It's weird for even me to say.
Of course it is.
It's a strange reality to sit back because I recently went back and I think it was like Amityville Horror was on TV, which is my first big movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like flipped it on and it was the scene of me crying. And I was like, it was an interesting thing for me to sit there at 21 and to see 5.5-year-old Chloe.
Mm.
And that was like, that's me, but it's not me. And it's like, but it is, you know, gonna be lasting in this film forever.
Movies are time capsules.
Yeah.
And there too, I can't imagine.
They're time capsules for us in the audience.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
And obviously for you too.
And it's a thing I always think about that you can look back at yourselves. Most people have home movies of some kind.
Yeah.
You can watch yourself be Carrie.
Literally grow
you
up.
You can watch yourself, you know, I mean, though the fact that you didn't just move in with Nicolas Cage in real life makes me sad because
bummer.
The opportunity seems, it was an option in my life. I'm obsessed.
I was about to say, are
fun
you?
Fun fact, obsessed.
I was about to say, is that like a big thing for you?
I just love him. I
Raising
just think
Arizona.
He's magical.
It's
everything.
Like, it's like my favorite.
Everything.
Right.
I just like.
Right.
But this is not just about, I promise, it's not just about Nicolas Cage. He's used to me going off on Nicolas Cage tangents.
I'm sorry. It's an okay, if you have to have a tangent,
I think that's not a
bad one.
It's not a bad tangent.
Yeah.
No, not bad
but
at all.
But you've worked with all kinds of people.
I'm going to return to what you just said about stumbling onto Amityville Horror. And when you watched yourself, did you have any memories of the actual making of that movie or where you were at that time?
I remember this thing that we called the Acorn Club. And it was because in the movie, I am 56 feet, I think, up on the top of a roof.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first stunt. So I started loving stunts, never really went away. And they would have to put me in this cherry picker, take me all the way up to the top of the roof, and then hook me up to the wires and put me on the roof. And there was an acorn tree up there, and I was able to grab these little acorns. And I would, every time I'd come down, I'd have like a little handful of acorns. And I would give them to each person that I loved on the set.
Aww.
And I'd be like, don't tell anyone, but you're in my acorn club. And I just like had this flash of it when I was watching the movie, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's just a funny thing that I really had fully forgotten about.
That's so sweet.
It was really, yeah, it was really like.
It's wonderful that the movie rekindled something positive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Yeah. Even though it's a horror film.
Yes.
Yeah. That's yeah. What do you remember about making a horror movie? The Acorn Club.
Yeah, the Acorn
but
Club. Exactly.
It's a lovely memory, though.
Very true.
That when you can watch something from then, that's the first thing that pops to mind. Mm. Not stress or trying to figure out how to be on set, but.
No, see, I never, when I was younger, I was blissfully unaware that this was even a job or a career.
Good.
I thought everyone was in on the joke that this was like playing tennis or like being in gymnastics. Like it looked and felt to me like it always was an extracurricular. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I think I was 13 when I looked at my mom and I was going in to be a freshman in high school. And all my friends were like, oh, you know, we gotta go to college and be all serious, and this is gonna be the big shift in our life after high school, and we're gonna have to really hit the road and be a, you know, become a part of the workforce. And I was like, oh wow, yeah, me too, I guess. And I looked at my mom and I remember going like, it's gonna really hurt one day when I have to give this up and like become a real person and like you know, work. And she was like, what? I was like, well, this is, you know, this is all like playtime. And it was literally a conversation of her being like, if you want to continue to do this, technically this can be a career. And that for me was, it really kind of blew me away. I was unaware of that completely.
Yeah. What?
And how did you react?
I was excited. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I was like, my next question goes, I was like, do I have to talk to my agents ever? I was like, because I currently don't enjoy it, so is there like a shift where I have to talk to them? And she was like, not if you don't want to. So that was like my next question. I was like, how serious do I have to get over like having to move all the parts? Yeah, that was funny.
It's important business.
Exactly, the big business moves.
No.
And I'm still like, I don't know. Just like sign the contract and, you know, as long as I have, you know, comfortable things, like a car. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to be able to drive myself around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's, like, literally all I want, is just to be able to be a human in that sense.
Well, but that is, whenever you read writers for bands,
right,
or you find out what actors need.
It's really simple things.
The thing, it's not necessarily all brown M&Ms.
No, it's always, like, for me, it's, like, I just want a house for my brothers. I bring my brothers out always. I never travel alone. And I have two dogs. And, like, I need to have a pet-friendly home and a car. That's really it.
You want to be a person.
Yeah, I want
to
be cozy.
Be a person.
I want to be cozy.
That's
nice.
Good. Now, I understand one of your brothers is your business manager.
Yeah. Business manager, then mm-hmm. another one is my manager.
Yes.
And then my mother's also my manager.
Mm-hmm. So do you now have to talk to your managers then?
Yes, I do talk to my managers.
Okay.
I do
okay.
deal with them on a daily basis. I live with one of them. Actually,
yeah.
Both of them I live with.
I wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
It's not, no.
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful, the little thing we got going. It's, I mean, you guys work together, you know, it's
yeah.
nice to
yeah.
work with family.
It's wonderful because at the root of everything is trust.
Mm.
Yeah.
Also
and translucency.
Love.
And like honesty.
Well, see, mm-hmm. that's the only
that's
the only downside
one.
I find, and there's only one.
Is the severe honesty?
No, is that our BS tolerance is really low.
Oh, God, yeah.
Is that because we deal with each other all day? My mom's
like,
the boss.
Right.
People who listen to the podcast hear us say it over and over again. Alice is the boss, and everyone knows that, and we're okay with it. But, you know, it's like you've got her,
yeah.
and you got my dad, and you got
yeah.
me. And I always say, if you're dealing with anything molten, you're dealing with a molten.
Yeah.
There is no hierarchy there.
It's, no.
And there is complete trust and love. Even when you want to kill each other, there's still complete trust and love.
And that's the most important thing is, like, it's not just him being able to look at me and be like, hey, look, you're being a brat. Or, like, you know, you're not that special. Like,
right.
shut up and, you know, do this or do that. And, like, being my older brother. It's also the fact that when he looks at me and says, like, bravo.
Exactly.
You did something really beautiful. That it's not him just saying it. It
yeah.
means something.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, the most important thing is integrity. And I follow that through outside of the family. Like, I've had my same agent since I was 11. and I don't want to change that up. I've had my same hair and makeup team since I was 13.
Wow.
So, like, I like loyalty. I like honesty. I like that relationship that's bred out of time spent together.
Mm-hmm.
And years of being able to call someone on their shit.
But it's true, though.
It's my thing. I'm like, I want to be able to call you out, and you call me out, and be like, shut up.
But that's it.
Don't you dare.
It's what makes you as sane as you can be
right.
when we live in an imaginary world.
And making fun of it and being like, this is so fun and silly mm-hmm. and this is art. And like, don't be serious because it's not that serious.
No.
We're not, it's not open heart surgery.
No.
We're not saving lives. And like, make fun of it and be fun and have fun. Yeah.
When people freak out over his reviews of something
and my Lord.
The responses will be, you know, like, you're terrible, we hate you, you should
die. Like, oh my gosh.
And my response always is, you know it's a movie, right? Mind you, I love movies.
Yeah, of course.
They're our life.
We
it's
all do,
what we
yes.
do.
It's our identity.
But it's a movie.
You know, at the end of the day, it's silliness. It's like,
yeah.
you know, it's like whether you like chocolate cake or vanilla cake. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, it's just not that serious.
Mm-mm.
And that's really important to be able to remind yourself of that.
Yeah.
At what age or around what age did you, maybe it was forever, I don't know, from the very beginning, did you have a say in the roles that you took?
I mean, I've always had a say over the characters that I wanted to audition for. It was mm-hmm. really what it was when I was mm-hmm. younger. It was, there's this character and this person and that person, and I was like, well, I like this one. This one sounds fun. And for me, it was always, you know, I grew up with four older brothers, and so it was always the more physical characters, the more arduous and like intense characters that I could really push something with. That was what I always wanted to do. I always really wanted a challenge. I never wanted to go out for characters that were anything like my own life at home. It was just something that I just enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, took the form and shape of Kick-Ass and movies like that and Let Me In and stuff like that. And it was fun for me to find anonymity and to walk through emotions that you don't walk through as a normal person. Mm-hmm. And that was, in a way, I look back on it now as an adult, and it's always been a form of therapy in that way for me. Being able to expand my emotional capacity and to see what that feels like and jump to the depths of despair or the highest form of elation and be in love with something or someone and be able to show those sides of myself and feel that within myself and how that genuinely played a very big role in my real life with how I conduct myself in situations.
Well, is it true that you spent 3 months training with Jackie Chan's team to do Kick-Ass?
I did 3 months with 8711, which was one team, and then 3 months with Jackie Chan's team, and then all throughout filming, we were still training every day. It was crazy. I was like a little machine. I was like, honestly a little machine. I had like a six-pack abs. It was so funny. I look back at myself now, and I was like, I was a total martial art, like, artist. Badass
wow.
little kid.
Talk about giving your all for your, for your art.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fun though. Like that's, it's still what I do. I love to be afraid of the characters I'm taking on and have this question when I take on a script. I want to go like, I don't know if I can accomplish this. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, but I know that no one's going to try their hardest as I am. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try my hardest to accomplish this. And I love that fear.
We've seen you do so many different kinds of things, and it's actually why I really enjoyed when you did the second Neighbors movie. Because I think it's the first time I got to see you play something that was fun.
Yeah.
Because you do stuff that's really intricate.
Quite serious.
And even if not serious, just intense in some way.
In some way, yeah.
You know?
No matter what.
So with that, I was really excited to see you playing what felt like a kid.
Yeah, it was very fun.
You know? And obviously everyone that you had, we had people like Beanie Feldstein. And like,
yeah,
and that's the other part is it wasn't just a throwaway
Clemens
movie.
And, yeah,
you had a killer cast with you,
Nora Lum, and who now is like the best. Like, I'm so happy she's getting her time right now to just kill it because Nora Aquafina is like the funniest comedian. Anyway.
It's very exciting when that happens, and we really enjoy that part is watching people and seeing what they do, and then also just seeing someone early and being excited. Last night we got to watch If Beale Street Could Talk.
And how is that? Is it wonderful?
It's hard. It's a good movie, but it's a hard movie.
Is Kiki wonderful in it?
Kiki Layne
is
amazing.
Extraordinary.
That's why you just made me think of it. As soon as the movie ended, we turned to each other last night and said, this is a star-making role.
Yeah.
That's what this is. So it's exciting. So exactly what you're saying, which is Awkwafina's now all over the place.
Yeah.
And you have people, you know, like Rose and Seth, and you're just going, this is an incredible... And Zac Efron, who I don't think gets enough due.
He's a sweetheart, too.
I think he's very talented, and I don't think people know that yet. And I hope that they will. But yeah, it's wild. At the same time, you do, like, Brain on Fire. Which I finally got to watch the other day. Hooray for Netflix.
Thank God, right? Finally get things seen.
But man, that movie
is a behemoth of a role to take on. Whoa.
Again, people who listen know that I have a lot of different autoimmune diseases, and I spend a lot of time in the hospital, and
really
God knows my parents have been through all kinds of hell because I've had all these problems.
Yeah.
But watching Brain on Fire...
It was a really, really great description and depiction of what that feels like, and to have the medical system against you, and how doctors try and, you know, label so many things as psychosis. It's like, this is not a self-implicated problem. This is not something that, like, they want to tuck you away and put you in a space where they don't have to figure it out and work that hard.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly it. Yeah.
And to show the hypocrisy and it being a true story, you know, and a beautiful book, and Susanna being who she is, was a beautiful woman and really, really outspoken about what she went through. But to show, like, Dr. Suhail Najjar, who looked at her and took a shot and actually listened to his patient and didn't say, well, this is what you are, you know, these are the symptoms. Like, no, ask questions.
This every single one of us who deals with invisible illnesses,
it's
every
scary,
single one of this will I like you want to put it on a little shelf and go, when you're feeling crazy and frustrated and you want to lose your mind, watch this, and then you go, oh, that's right. This is why we try to help each other.
Yeah.
This is why we talk to each other as much as we do. That's why there's groups.
Exactly.
You know, hashtags sometimes help a lot, because if I hashtag spoon life or something like that and I get into that world, people go, oh, that's right, it's not just me.
Yeah, of course.
And that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine.
Communication's a big deal.
Oh, gosh, how did you get into that? I'm sorry, you can't. Sorry, Daddy. How did you figure that one out? Like, how did you even start?
So that was a project that really, it came across my desk and I signed on to it, and they were like, listen, this is going to be made in a week. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, I actually want to do it. So I had like 7 days to jump into that character.
Jeez.
And I spent every day talking to Susanna. And she actually sent me all of her medical records. And so I read literally the doctor's report on her full fall into psychosis. So from her very first meeting with her psychotherapist to her her doctor, to the hospital, to actually being put in, and then hearing the story from her family's point of view. And I just really dissected the entire... You know, that was what's wonderful about that film, is that I did have
an
actual person to talk to.
The video that started to make the rounds of... They filmed... For anyone who doesn't know, there's this young woman who had the nightmare happen, which is she was okay, and then suddenly she was not okay.
And it looked like a flu, and then it was full psychosis, and then it was rigidity. And
what she went through, it's the kind of thing that I don't even think people would know to write about.
No,
if they
it's
wanted
not even
to write fiction, it's like, this is such a wild thing. But because it's real, there's a lot of documentation, including, I think it's like the month-long footage of when they kind of locked her up.
Yeah,
and
they kept her on, it's a seizure cam.
Yeah.
So they recorded all of her actions, and there's hundreds of hours. Actually, one of those shots made it into the film.
Yeah.
Which we wanted to put her, we used her footage in the film, which is really cool.
Wow.
Because we actually do look a lot alike. Which
is
weird. And it turned out to be something actually very simple to cure, which is viral encephalitis.
Yep.
Which she could have gotten from putting a pin in her mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That someone else had, and it,
sure.
It's nuts.
So, all right, so you described it as a behemoth of a role.
Mm.
And can you shake that off at the end of the day?
That was a role that it was very difficult. I mean, just the act of reenacting the seizures. I met with so many doctors. I watched so much footage of actual seizures. I met with actual seizure patients. I went to hospitals. And I had to, it was a very physically taxing role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, being tied up to the bed and, you know, the restraints, and having to throw myself into a full psychosis, mm-hmm. and feel that anger that she was feeling. Because the way that, you know, Suzanne explained it to me was, in the moments where she was angry, she felt this almost godlike complex where she could look at people and she could age them in her mind. She literally, she was able to manipulate what she was seeing. Wow. Through this viral encephalitis. She was literally as if, it was as if she was magical. Like, she was able to do things and manipulate things in her mind. And so in turn, she also heard things and saw things weren't real. Mm. And so I had to put myself in these shoes where she didn't think anything was wrong with her, and she thought everyone was completely incorrect, and she was angry about it, and she was going to tell you she was angry about it, and she was going to tell you that it was, like, wrong. And so I just had to, like, throw myself in this position and feel all of these emotions and really push myself there that, yeah, at the end of the day, it was to throw yourself into that psychosis is jarring. Mm-hmm. It's really jarring. And in every scene, to have people tell you that you're incorrect with the way you feel is really difficult.
I'm sure. Yeah. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
What about some of the extreme characters you've played who maybe aren't so serious, certainly not based on real people.
Real person, right?
But, you know, but Let Me In and
Carrie
are two examples of that. Mm. Did they drain you in any way, the way this this other project is probably in a class by itself?
Carrie, in particular, probably to this day, I would probably say Carrie is my hardest role.
Mm-hmm.
That was a role that I would say that also because I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
This is my very first lead role. This
was so young.
This is my first one. And there was a lot for me to be able to take in on that set. Kim Pierce, our director, made the set very realistic, and I was unaware of this, but she talked to a lot of different actors and had them not really talk to me on set and stuff like that. And so not only was I playing a character that was bullied in every single frame of the picture, that it was actually happening around me while I was on set.
Oh my.
And we stripped me of everything that made me Chloe. And so I was really Carrie. We took my hair and turned it into the red hair and put these crazy extensions in it. And I lived every day in the skin of another person. And it was a very intense experience being a young person too, and trying to figure out who I am and feeling these emotions that she was feeling too. And as arduous as that was, it was also really beautiful, because it allowed me to find a lot of strength. Strength in not only, you know, coming up against these people who were openly bullying me and ostracizing me and making fun of me to my face, but being able to stand up as the first lead character I'd done on a set, and what that means as an actor, on what tone you set when you walk into the room, on what it's like to have a seat at the table and have an open conversation with not just your director, but your producers in the studio. And working with Julianne Moore, and have her, which is, that was the first time I met her, and she, for me, is, she's a mother, she's a best friend, she's my mentor. We still talk on, like, a weekly basis. Like, she's someone who has helped me through a lot of different areas in my life, but she created a really special space between the two of us to be able to find those characters. And even as intense as the Margaret and Carrie relationship was, we had this beautiful, like, quiet, secret communication. And it taught me that the best art is born out of comfort and safety. And it's okay to joke around right before a big crying scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing to do. And so on one hand, I had this, you know, every day with the other teenage actors and showing, like, the real life bullying in actual life, mm-hmm. and then filming it on screen, and it was very difficult. But then with Julie, she taught me so much about what it was as an actor to set the tone, and that's my decision, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was a very, for me, it was a massive learning lesson, that whole movie. I learned so much about what my job was outside of just showing up to work and doing my best acting. Mm-hmm. But this is so much more than just doing your best acting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot there. But yeah, when I was going home at night, it was, it took me months, I think, afterwards to really shape that character.
Wow.
It was a very, very, very sad character. Very sad, sad life, my character.
Well, you have good taste in mentors, though.
Oh, mm-hmm. God. She's a goddess.
I've heard her say, I heard her say in an interview not long ago, that she loves to just chatter.
That's all she does.
Right up to the moment they say action.
And then she's sobbing and, like, killing it. That's the funny, like, literally, she was dying in my arms in this scene. And she had all the knives in her chest from me telekinetically shoving the knives in her body, mm-hmm. and killing her. And she's sobbing in my arm, dying in my arms, and I'm crying. And right before action, she'd be like, you know, I just don't know what wallpaper to put on Liv's room. Action! And I'm like, Julie! And when I worked with Denzel Washington, it was funny because we talked about that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'll never forget this one moment when she was in handcuffs and I was putting her in the car. And it was this big moment, he said, and she looked at me and she was like, oh no, lock me up. And he was like, Julie, what's happening? Right before action. And it's so funny. She constantly makes fun and plays and makes it silly, and she wants you to. She knows the best acting comes out of having fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I've literally worn as a badge of, like, honor, you know, from working with her. And now I walk into every situation and I'm like, just, you know what, make a fool out of yourself and do it in every way possible. And leave it all on the table and know that you did it all.
What a great compass, a true north, you know, it tells you where you ought to be, where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that you have control over that.
Yes, complete control. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, the biggest thing for me is that you set the tone. You have complete control over whether or not you make this, you know what I mean, the most intense, tiring, arduous, and, like, it's already hard. You're waking up in all weird hours of the night. Mm-hmm. You're with a bunch of people that you hardly know for months on end, and it's a strange process. And either you just have fun and you make it silly, or you make this the hardest two months of your life.
Yeah.
But it's your choice.
Yeah.
When did your brothers start coming with you? Like, when did that shift happen?
So Trevor has been, at least Trevor, has been on every set ever. I've never been on a set without him.
Wow.
So he is my person. He is my heart, my soul, my brain, the other half of me. We are directing together soon. We produce together. Like, we do everything together. We have breakfast together every day. Like, we're inseparable.
And he actually was the one intending to be an actor first.
Yeah, and then he was like, he hated being directed. He was like, I don't like anyone's notes. And he was like, so I'm quitting this. But he quit acting around, I think it was like 18 is when he quit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we moved to New York for him to go to the Professional Performing Arts High School, mm-hmm. in New York. And I got into acting through auditorily memorizing his monologues.
Ha. Huh. Mm.
And I would just memorize pages of dialogue from listening to it, because I'm an auditory learner.
Yeah.
And then we would play around. And so I would, like, repeat his monologues to him, and then he'd be like, oh, try and cry in this moment. And then we would literally play with the various, areas and emotions we can go into within the monologue. And that's how we started. And then I looked at my mom, and I was like, I want to try this, whatever this is, this playtime. I was like, I want to do this. And she was like, nope. And she was like, that's not happening. You are 5 years old and you can't even read, much less, you know, go and be an actor. And it was Trevor who championed me. Trevor was like, Mom, you flew to New York to let me do it. Let me take her in on auditions. You won't have to do it. Like, I'll do it with her. It'll be our thing. And from there on, it popped off. Yeah.
Wow.
We moved to LA for various family reasons, actually. Mm-hmm. And then it really obviously took that next step.
Sure.
But it was not for acting, which is mm-hmm. crazy.
Speaking of crazy.
Yeah.
Let me in.
Uh-huh. Wonderful movie.
It is a wonderful movie.
I love that movie.
Best translation of a foreign language film.
And a lot of people agree with that.
I've ever seen.
Matt is a really special director. And,
And did you find that character challenging or fun?
Both. I mean, my most challenging or my most fun. You know, like I said earlier, you know, for me, if it's not a challenge, I don't know why I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it's not a challenge for me, let it, you know, don't do the role because for someone else that could be their challenge. You know, that's their moment to do that. So those two are, you know, parallel for me.
I get it.
But that movie was difficult. You know, a 300-year-old vampire, I was 12. So stepping into a story like that, which ultimately the story is about love and loneliness, and it's a beautiful love story, a very tumultuous, dark love story. And for a 12-year-old, it was an interesting thing for me to step into the shoes of. And the way that I went about that was I journaled as her. And I would journal as her from her backstory and the backstory from the book of where she came from and how she was turned. And actually one of the deleted scenes, which I don't know if you guys, I don't know how big of fans you are if you saw the deleted scenes, but one of the deleted scenes is we actually filmed me being turned into a vampire. And it's really horrific and really sad. And the way that we depict the turning of it was, in a way, we depicted it almost like a sexual assault because she didn't choose it. And this is way before, you know, the conversations we were having now. But being a 12-year-old girl and being able to walk through these emotions and these steps, it was really beautiful and really harrowing to build that backstory. And it really showed to me the importance of backstory in a character. Mm-hmm. And the importance of, and this is, you know, my first step in going into a character, is where were they before the 115 pages that you're reading in front of your face?
Mm-hmm.
What was their relationship with their parents? What was their first love? What happened in their childhood that affected them to where as an adult or as an older person from, you know, before when we're seeing them currently, what happened in their past that is the reason for these knee-jerk reactions currently? What is the emotional cavities that we naturally fall into from the things that we've gone through in our lives? And that movie in particular really showed me the importance of that, because I had to walk through 300 years of her losing the loves of her life. She first lost her family, that was her first loss, and then every one of her caretakers, these, you know, boys her age that end up growing up, you know, but they love her and she loves them wholeheartedly. She loves Owen as much as she loves her older caretaker, because she knows ultimately she's gonna keep and continue to lose these people, and she will never be able to be released from the hell that she has been placed in by a man who did this to her without her choice. And so it's a massive conversation, what is actually going on in Abby's life and what she's gone through and how ultimately she's been placed in this position and in this burden of being a vampire by someone who forced himself upon her and forced this upon her. And that is a really, really intense subject.
Of course. Do you know why they decided to cut that scene?
I don't know. I think it just took too much out of the relationship. I know that they cut a lot more into the relationship to really show that between Owen and I. There were also like a couple little scenes, I think, with just me and my caretaker, like in the apartment and doing little puzzles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think he just wanted to really keep it about that relationship because, and I agree, is like it really does live and die by that and their connection to one another.
Have you always been this articulate and contemplative? Like, I feel like it's Oprah's
been,
gotta run for her money right now.
It's been, you know, it's funny because I've never felt my age.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, this industry and this career path has been such a gift, because I would be so weird in any other path. And people would think I'm such a total weirdo. And like, that little girl is like an 80-year-old. And I don't know why she's acting like that. And for me, like, as much as I am, you know, I speak like this, I also do like love Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I am also into karaoke. And there's a lot of things that make me 21. But it's given me the chance to not shy away from my strangeness of loving to psychoanalyze things, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've always been obsessed with literature. I was reading Wuthering Heights at 10 years old. Like, I was obsessed with knowledge and education and listening to things and asking questions. And it's been really wonderful to wear that on my sleeve and not shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And show that through my strange kind of sentiment of who I am, it makes me a better actor, though.
Yeah.
And that's really something I can be really proud of. And that's why I look at a lot of young people and people of my age or younger, and I'm like, don't shy away from your uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
Be weird. Be a total weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess what? You're being so honest with yourself and you're living your life so much. You know, be provocative. Be like, do what you want to do and be like, F it, you know? And if someone says that you're a total freak, be like, thank you so much.
Right.
And you're lying about who you are currently.
Yeah.
And by you saying that I'm a total freak, that means that you are too, but you just are locking it up in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you a bigger freak than me, because I'm doing it out in the street, you know?
Have you ever taken a conventional acting class?
Never. You know, it's funny. Actually, a few times when I was really, really young,
mm-hmm.
and they made me scrapbook. And I was like, oh, like, here's the thing. I don't know if the scrapbooking is going to help the character. I got
everybody,
this.
Everybody is so different
if
in how
be
they
any
figure.
Kind of treat.
Yeah, right?
Dude, the amount of, oh my God, the amount of like symbol experts. And there is a type of I had an actor explain to me that they like to choose animals.
Amazing.
For their characters. And I was like, and so in my head, I always think about like, I'm a fish.
I am a turkey.
And like, they lay on the floor and they pretend to be, they'll if you're a turkey, they'd be like, the person would be like, gobble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that for me is where I go like, okay, acting, there's a lot of people, like, you don't need to do that. Like, Julianne Moore isn't doing that.
But see,
listen,
that's
like,
That's it. When you...
I just am like, I gotta go.
But again, with the low bullshit tolerance,
I'm
this
like,
is exactly where that comes
where
from.
That's where you're like, shit, dude, like, I can't do
if
that.
If you work with Julianne Moore, who is arguably one of the greatest actresses that
yes!
will ever live.
Ever, yeah.
And she behaves that way, your tolerance for someone going,
then, like, you
I need 4 hours
that.
To be left alone, do
or,
not
like,
look
I'm
at
being
me.
In this scene, so I have to be a total asshole to
everybody
everyone around me.
Him.
I'm like, no, you're just feeding off the fact that you can be a jerk right now, and
right?
we all have to be like, okay, sure, walking on eggshells. Like, hell no. But it's so not my vibe.
It is interesting.
Oh,
like,
God.
I love hearing those kinds of stories. Was it Saving Private Ryan?
It's
is
so
one of them
weird.
Where, like, they separated one out so that he would feel like an outsider. This happens a lot with
that's
military
like
movies.
Yes.
They do it a lot where they're like, we're not supposed to like you, so you go over there.
That's what I was saying about what I learned on Carrie.
Yeah.
One thing was like, sure, like the other kids, like they want, you know, to do that. But then with Julie and I, she was like, you know what I mean? And I go like, okay, well,
yeah.
listen.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to be so serious about
yeah.
this whole
yeah.
thing.
No.
And like, teach their own. If you're going to go be method, then like, go do it in your corner. But like,
right.
don't come and be an asshole to me. And like, I'm not going to call you by your name. I'm just going to be like, hi, and just call you a friend. Like, I'm not going to call you by your character name all day. I don't like when people try and call me my character name on set, I'm like, no, I'm Chloe.
Right.
And they just refer to me as Chloe, and then when I'm acting, I'm acting. It's not, you know, it's not
yeah.
that serious.
Oh.
Now, what actors, Julianne Moore being the pinnacle, we all agree.
Agreed.
Could you tell us some other actors who have impressed you?
Tell us about Nicolas Cage. I'm just kidding. We all know he's perfect. It's fine. Go on.
Silly. That I've worked with or just like come in contact with? Denzel Washington is another one who really mentored me. Him and Pauletta, his wonderful wife. John David, his amazing son. Like, I love that family. I love the Washingtons. They are... I mean, that's where, like, the Southern comes through, and we're all very Southern, and, like, we bond over caramel cake. And, you know, I just, I love them. I love them very deeply. And Denzel took me under his wing in a movie that was very, very difficult. In a character, I was playing a young prostitute. You know, at,
typecasting,
at
16 I got it.
Years old, exactly. Yeah. It was, he saw me.
Saw you on the corner. He said
me.
That one.
Yeah, no. He was really wonderful with me from a young age, and... It's not just being wonderful at that point in time, but he kept up with it. Mm-hmm. And the family kept up with it. And they check in. And they give you a call. And they champion you. And to this day, Pauletta will walk around and be like, I love Chloe. Chloe is my girl. And, like, if you cross her, like, we will come after you.
Right.
And I'm like, I feel the same way. And, you know, it's a crew. You know what I mean? Like, they're wonderful. So that's probably, like, someone who really, really shaped me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know... I would say working with Desiree Akhavan and Sasha Lane and Forrest Goodluck in The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which is my most recent film, that was a different than anything, also very, very special experience. And it's because they aren't the most famous I worked with.
Right.
And it was Sasha's first real scripted movie. You know, American Honey is...
It's a different...
Yeah, it's a different world. And this was a proper scripted film, you know, and Desiree Akhavan directing it. This is her first real proper film that she wasn't actually in, and she was directing us. And so to be on a set like that, it was monumental for me in the progression of who I am and my identity as an actor. Because it made me sit back and go, yeah, I know a lot about being on set. I've spent more time on set than I've spent anywhere in my whole life. But to see it from their perspective and the wonderment and the questioning and also the, well, I don't want to do it that way. And I'm like, well, that's true. I agree. I guess we don't need to do it that way. And it's just like, it was a really special, special experience that... also created a bond where they're my best friends. Like, I love them, and I would go to the end of my day for that. And that's important, really important.
Sure, yeah. It is. Of course.
Well, as you say, it comes down to this is 2 months or however many months you're shooting of your life.
Yeah.
And if you can have that, then it's a happy shoot.
It's a
happy shoot, and especially because the film is not a happy movie, not unhappy.
Yeah, it's not like unhappy, but the subject matter is tenuous.
Yeah.
Like, it is a difficult subject matter. But, I mean, that was also the first movie I did off of my year and a half break that I took.
Right.
So that was also, it was a very just different, everything was different. We shot it in 23 days for $850,000.
Quick.
It was a shotgun shoot. We filmed in the camp that we actually lived in. So we were all living in the rooms that we were filming in. So it was a really wild process, but it brought me back into this career and going like, okay, I know why I'm doing this again, and I understand why I'm doing this, and this is the point.
He's fascinated with your break.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with you having not having met you now and listened to you. nothing would surprise me. You're a very special person, clearly, and you have a great intellect and a great curiosity, and these are all great attributes for an actor of any age, at any time. But what finally pushed you to the brink to say, I don't want to do this anymore?
It was for the first time I looked in the mirror and I didn't recognize who was looking back at me. Mm-hmm. And I laid my head down at night and I had no drive. And I had no want to wake up the next day and go into the script meetings that I was having for a project that I was attached to. And it was, you know, a very big movie. It was a couple big movies I was attached to. And I was faced with these questions in these meetings that to me felt rhetorical. They felt like it wasn't even a discussion. And my answers were like, if this is even a conversation, then why are you even going about making this movie? Because I don't see a point. And it was futile. And I was like, when did the decisions and these characters that I was putting myself into not become a challenge? When did this become a cakewalk? When was I just doing this because I didn't want to sit at home for 6 months and have off time? And why am I making those decisions based on boredom? I'm not actually interested. And I looked at my brother and I was distraught. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, for the first time, I don't think I'm making the right decision. And I don't think I need to be doing what I'm doing right now. And I got to pull out. And he was like, okay. And I was like, okay. And he was like, yeah. And my agents were like, you're going to lose your career. Everything's going to implode. No one's ever going to want you again. And my brother was like, shut up. Shut up. It's a good thing I'm working with brothers, family. Mm. And he was like, do it. And we're going to take as much time as we want. And until she finds that project that clicks and it does it for her, we're not going to work. And I was like, even if that takes 3 years, even if that takes 6 months, even if that takes 2 years, and he said, as long as it takes. And I quit, and I sat back, and I read.
This was at age 19.
Yeah, this was 19. Yeah, 19. And I sat back, and I read, and I listened to music, and I traveled alone, and I questioned everything. I questioned my family. I asked them questions about our childhood. I asked them questions about, and you know, having four older brothers, my oldest brother is 15 years older than me. Mm-hmm. I asked questions about moments that we had all been in the same room. And I was like, but what did you come from that moment? What did you hear in that moment? What did you hear? And they all had different answers. So I got perspective. I got perspective on the world. I campaigned for Hillary Clinton. I became, you know, more outspoken in my activism for LGBT rights. And I found my identity outside of my characters, which for the first time I saw the importance in that, because as I said earlier, my identity was my characters. My identity and my therapy was acting. And for the first time, I took it upon myself to find that, who is Chloe? And by finding Chloe and by finding what that was outside, I realized that activism and art, that was my next step forward. I had to connect the worlds. And I always had compartmentalized those worlds because I had this fear of those people out there ruining this person in here. Mm-hmm. And so I created two lives. And when I broke down that wall and I was like, you know what? I'm in control. It's my choice what I let in and what I do and where I go and these choices I make. And the first movie, the first script I read was The Miseducation of Cameron Poe. So I went like, this is it. This is it. And I'm not taking no for an answer on it. And it was it. And after that, I did Suspiria with Luca. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, another kind of whirlwind, but also very socially aware. And a movie which makes people sit back and go like, well, what the hell did I just watch? And that, you know, that's important. Is for me, I want to question things. Mm-hmm. I never want to stop questioning things. Mm-hmm. And I always want to be challenged. And I want to be terrified.
So he started really young. And obviously very different type of thing.
Right,
but it's interesting to me. And I think it's because you went to high school. He unlike actors who much of the time end up being homeschooled or they have tutors on set. Mm-hmm. I think because you still had a life.
Right.
Even though you were doing all the other things you were doing, that's why you're, I won't say normal, but that's why you're about as regular as they can.
Well, I had a nerd life.
That's true. Very nerd life. Big time nerd life. But it's fascinating to talk to different people, exactly what you're saying, of how do you figure out who you are?
Yeah.
how do you tell people that without them thinking that you're telling them? So it's not like, I'm holding a press conference.
Yeah.
My name is Chloe. Hello. Mm-hmm. No, it's like, no, this is just me. Mm-hmm. But part of that is, again, you started so young. You're 21 now. You're still a baby. That's, yeah, you know, and yeah. I don't say baby in any kind of a condescending
way. But I have so much life to, like, but you're, figure that out.
You're young.
And I go through more iterations of who this is.
Yep. And yeah. And especially, yeah, you know, and I've loved reading the different things you've said to sort of boost, whether it's LGBT or any of them.
Right.
Because every time someone says something stupid, you're there to go, hi, hello.
Hey.
No.
No.
You are why we can't have nice things.
This is bad.
Like, but that's it, is it allows you to come forward and sort of go, right, I know it's easy for you to say she's an actress, what does she know? Because that's one of people's favorite things to yell at
always
on rooftops.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're going, yeah, but I'm actually doing something about the
problems. Now let's go back to something just before
we
started recording.
Fashion.
Chloe arrived in a very striking outfit.
Very snappy little dude.
It is.
Yes, it is.
But you owed Dolly. Love me some Dolly.
What's not to love?
Big fan of Dolly. My Southern roots run deep with my music taste, for sure.
We just got to see her the other day.
God, she's great.
And I'm not going to lie to you. I cried like an infant.
Sobbed. I went to a Jimmy Kimmel recording of her just to see her live.
Yo,
I was like, please let me come.
Yeah. I kept telling friends, I didn't know that my restraining order allowed me that close, because she was just right there.
My biggest dream, my secret big dream, is to do the story of her.
Oh my God.
I would be the perfect Dolly.
Wow.
Guys.
I'm in.
Let's go.
I'm in. I will.
Right?
That's it.
Right before she hit.
Oh man.
Back when she lived in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I am in. I'm in for this. Yeah. Oh, God. Well, I look forward to that one day. In our future. It'll happen.
But the fashion.
No, but even that, this is a thing.
But you were making the point that fashion is a statement.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot going on in the conversation that, you know, women have to dress a certain way to feel empowered. And I think for me, it's always been the most empowering thing for me is deciding what I'm wearing.
Yeah.
And going like, today I'm gonna dress up like a damn Barbie doll. Or tomorrow I'm gonna wear a suit. And I'm gonna do whatever I wanna do when I wake up that morning and I wanna do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because also this clothing has no bearing over who I am.
No,
it's just a fun, silly way to express me. Same way I feel about my hair. I've always been like, I don't really, because I don't hold any importance on these strappings. Like, that this is not what defines me,
right,
but it can be something that illuminates, or, you know, it is a way for me to just throw a little bit of something on, you know.
Well, I think it goes back to what you're saying about fun.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I so respect everyone saying, the reason this conversation came about is there's a lot going on now where they're saying they don't want you just be asking women on red carpets, what are you wearing?
Right.
I think the problem with anything is sometimes the pendulum swings too far.
Right.
And so the idea is that when you walk over to me and you're talking about the miseducation of Cameron Post,
right,
and why it's so important to you, and you give me a whole thing and then I go, great, so what are you wearing?
Right.
That's what we don't want.
Yeah, that's inappropriate.
That's
wrong, because
want.
You're not listening and you're, yeah.
No.
That's,
yeah. But if you say, I'm wearing this today because it's Dolly.
Yeah.
And I love Dolly.
Yeah. Or I just
would you like to describe, since this is an audio medium.
Okay.
To be fair.
All right.
Would you like to try to describe?
The first thing is that we got color blocking.
We got color.
Which is important.
Purple. We got color blocking.
Yep.
So if anyone knows that, it's the Calvin Klein's new collection.
You're so fancy.
So there's a little bit of a...
it's denim. Fitted denim. We've got
denim. We've got a Western vibe.
Oh, it's
with a. There's just a. It's, you know.
It's good.
It's cozy.
It's
too.
All good.
It's very comfortable.
Oh yeah. See, that's not those shoes, young lady.
No, it's why I have them unzipped. Don't
there
tell
you go.
Anyone that. Tell them that, Chloe. I just told him. Shoot.
No,
no one
your
knows.
Secret is safe with
no
those.
One knows.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's also like if I collaborate with a designer to create a special dress for the Oscars or for this or for that, like, that's also something that I don't mind talking about, that because that's a creative, you know, that's something that was birthed out of that creative medium of us discussing that, and that designer might have been, you know, excited about who I was as a person and wanted to, you know, put me in something that, you know,
makes you feel good.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
It's a fun thing, and it's silly, and it's art. And we don't have to be so darn serious about it.
Yeah. Again, it's just that pendulum. As long as you feel like you're being heard, and as long as the questions are talk about what's important to you, and then you go, but by the way,
this is fabulous. Exactly.
You know, it's like, cool. Yeah. And it's the same for men. You know, I talk about my dad and I joke about this, but it's true. When he feels good, when I get him a new suit and he feels cool,
feeling
every
snappy.
Now and then he'll say to me, he goes, I feel cool in this.
Yeah, I feel
and
good.
I was like, see, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It has meaning. Yeah. All right. Our listeners would rise up as one in protest if I didn't ask you about two movies.
Okay, go ahead.
Hugo.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Working for Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
And working in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Did that have any impact on you, on your performance? Did
it had an impact on everyone. I mean, it had an impact... most specifically on Bob Richardson
sure,
and Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
You know, Marty. As well as saying to, I was talking to the SCAD students earlier, and it was actually something really interesting that I thought about it, and it was really important because I looked at all these students in front of me, and they're students, right? They're learning, and they're taking chances, and they're taking shots. And Marty is someone who never isn't a student.
Mm-hmm.
He never walks into a situation going like, I know what to do right now because I'm Martin Scorsese and do what I told you to do. He on that movie constantly would go, I don't know how to use this stuff. He and Bob would go like, we've never used 3D. So you know what? Let's do it all. I mean, the best way I can describe this is we had two prototype cameras at the time. There's only two cameras in the world, these 3D cameras, which consist of, you know, a camera looking this way and a camera looking down, and it takes both images. So these cameras are very heavy, very clunky, very hard to fit in certain spaces. And so Bob obviously took that as like, I'm going to fit it in the smallest space possible. I'm going to put it on the craziest, things possible. And so one of those was putting it on a Steadicam, putting the Steadicam operator on a Segway, and having the Steadicam operator move the Segway while chasing a dog who's chasing a child. Needless to say, he broke one of the only two cameras in the world.
Yeah.
But it's that way of going about it, that he... Both Marty and Bob, they didn't go in cock robin. Mm-hmm. They walked in going, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm a student and I'm going to just try and we're gonna just do everything. I mean, we would sometimes do 30 angles of the same scene just because they were gonna put more fake lint into the air. We had lint shakers who would literally shake lint into the air to show the depth and to be able to show that depth.
Yeah.
And that was something where, as a 13-year-old, to see Martin Scorsese look at you and go like, I don't know what I'm doing, kid, and I'd be like, cool. That is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. You are still learning, and you're not afraid of continuing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a really special experience for me. He was a really wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Dark Shadows.
Oh, my God, Tim.
Tim Burton.
I love Tim so much. My favorite story with Tim is he gets very flustered sometimes trying to tell you like what he wants you to do. He's like, I don't know. I think you should do a... He's like, hold on. And he has an assistant come over. He's like, give me a pen and paper. And he just drew out a little sketch. And he gave it to me. He goes, do this. And I was like, okay. And it was me, like, you know, a little scratch drawing, his crazy drawings of me with the werewolf claws and a face like this and doing that. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And it was just funny. He has this way of nothing's off the table.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things that I really wanted to do is obviously the iconic Batman Returns. You have Michelle who goes meow. And I am a werewolf in my movie. Michelle Pfeiffer is my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, in this big fight sequence, I have to look at her, and I was supposed to say mother. And I looked at Tim, and I go, Tim, can I look at her and go woof? Please let me woof at her.
Please.
Because everyone will know, and let me yell. I was like, you've got to let me do it. And he was like, 100%, but let's not tell Michelle.
Yes.
And we were shooting double coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this crazy moment where I'm on all fours and I'm running towards her on this big rig, this big, you know, big fight sequence, and I fly up and I land, and I look at her, and she goes, "Carolyn," and I look at her and I go, "Woof." And her fucking face, guys, everything. It was incredible. And she literally looked at me, and it's in the movie. It's the moment in the movie. And
I remember
this. And she looks at me and she goes, like that, this, oh, my daughter. And it was this thing of, like, not just my daughter's a werewolf, but it was me hearkening back to the meow. It was so cool. And that was the thing with Tim is he never would stop you, but he would also let you do it singularly. He wouldn't walk around all the actors and be like, so this is what is happening. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, when he and Johnny would come up with something crazy, it would just happen in front of you, and you would let it unfold. And there's something really spectacular about that creativity that comes out of that. It was a wild shoot. And one of the other things I wanted to do, I was like, I want to be able to, because I'm a werewolf, I was like, I want to be able to, like, sniff people's intentions. I was like, so when he walks in, I want to, like, be able to smell it on him that he's lying. And so there's these weird scenes.
You have to see a new movie called Border.
Oh, Lord. Is it good?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes. It's also very strange.
I love, like, strange choices.
Well, this is
strange.
Strange choice. But
it's really, really
it relates
good.
To what you just said.
The sniffing?
Mm-hmm.
Sniffing intentions?
Yes. Yes.
Trevor and I are like, let's sniff intentions.
Let's sniff intentions.
Like, let's do it. Yeah. And so every time, if you watch really closely in the movie, there are some moments where it's still there. I'd be like, I move my head and it looks like I'm just breathing in. But it's like, you know, dogs can, like, kind of sniff out a person.
Yeah. Yes.
So I took it quite literally, the whole sniffing out a person. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing is Tim treated me no different than he treated Helena, than he treated Johnny, than he treated Michelle Pfeiffer. And it was a set where everyone was equal. And we all showed up and just did our best jobs. And that, for a cast that was that stacked, is
so
rare.
You walked into a room with Johnny Depp, Tim Burton, Helena Bonham Carter, and Michelle
Pfeiffer.
Like,
I gotta go.
I'm dying on your behalf.
I was freaking out. I was like, I gotta go home.
Yeah, right.
I was like, I don't need to be here.
You made a
big mistake.
I'm so sorry.
This is not where I need to be. I'm so sorry for intruding.
Right.
Like, please respect. Like, I didn't mean to do this. And then Colleen Atwood is doing the clothing, and I'm like, I gotta go.
Legend.
Like, this is something
Legend.
That I don't need to be here. This is not right. Yeah, it was cool though. It was cool.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you responded that way.
And before we set you free, you said that you're going to make a movie.
Short film.
Direct a movie. Okay.
Starting slow.
That's smart.
And I'm not going to overdo it because I think people massively fail by going out on their first thing and being like, I'm doing a motion picture.
Yeah.
And it's like,
what you want on a silver screen?
You're shutting up.
No.
It's a bad decision, honey. And I was like, you bombed it.
Okay.
So Trevor and I found a really beautiful story, and, you know, I love genre. So it's a neo-noir horror flick.
Okay.
Little nine-page thing.
You have a little knowledge of that, too.
Yeah, right.
A little experience, yeah.
I like a little bit of horror. But it's funny us working together, because and people probably wouldn't expect this, but I hate talking to actors. I genuinely hate it. I don't enjoy it. So I take the other road. So I deal more with the DP and the structure mm-hmm. of the shots mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. and telling the story through the lens. And Trevor's much more on the side of the actors and talking to them. So we work perfectly together.
So
but I can't handle
started?
Actors. We've started the process of getting it all together. And we know who's going to be in it now. But we keep having to push it because all the work.
Life,
and stuff. But we're gonna be doing that, I think, by the end of the year, I think.
Oh, well.
Hopefully.
We wish you every success.
Thank you. That's very exciting, my friend. Congratulations.
That's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Are you a social media person?
I have a funny relationship with social media. Because I've had it now since I was a fairly young person. But I'm not, you know, anywhere near the Gen Z kids.
There's a lot of stupid out there.
Yeah. I talk to, like, the 18-year-olds now, though, and they like, use it for it's a totally different world. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot happening on social media. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I try and weigh it out. And I go, like, do people need to see what I'm eating for breakfast? No. Can I use it to, you know, let them in on the behind the scenes of my life and, like, a little bit, you know, personal moments of me on set or things like that. That's really beautiful. Can I also use it as a platform to be able to push out my political messaging and what I believe in and use it as a communication starter and a way to hold people accountable? So I try and always constantly remind myself that it's not just me putting it online for my friends, that this is also a part of who I am in my career. Mm-hmm. But to try and be as honest and realistic as possible, and not post a bunch of selfies, which I won't do.
Mm-mm. Well, okay then. So selfies. Where do people follow you?
Chloe G. Moretz on Instagram and Chloe G. Moretz on the Twitter. And that's the only two official accounts I have. But if you find me on Spotify, I have some bomb playlists. So if you can find me in there.
Note to self.
Find me in there. It's under just Chloe Moretz. And it's pretty
big
good,
things.
Good
big
stuff
things are happening.
Okay. Big bomb playlists.
And
why don't you have any bomb playlists? Can I just say,
what's up, Pop?
It's goals, not new goals.
Most of my social media is posting photos of him as a young person because it's adorable. Yes.
That's really fun.
And you enjoy it so much when I do that.
That's amazing.
Pursuit of embarrassment.
Listen, that's what we're supposed to do.
This is what families are for.
So I do to my mother every one of her birthdays. I'm like, so good luck.
Yep.
I love to find photos that her with too much makeup on in the 80s. She looks psychotic. My favorite. Oh my gosh.
Little baby Leonard.
Oh my lord.
Embarrassing him should be a professional.
Oh my god, yes.
Jesse's
put it on
now,
the bag.
Jesse's now displaying
I love
picture
fan
of me
club
in the 10th grade.
I am.
As That's president amazing. Of the Motion Picture Club.
I am the fan club president. Yes. You can find you at Leonard Maltin and me at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
That is all true. It's also true that we've had a great time talking to you, Chloe.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
When is Cameron Post going to be in theaters?
So we did our platform release. We're re-releasing November 6th.
Okay.
And we're going to be available on some streaming services November 6th as well.
All right. Well, then as soon as – when you hear this episode, it will be available. So go out there and watch it.
Get it, guys. If there's any voters listening, throw us up there. The little movie that could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Throw it in the ring.
Why
We're
not?
All about supporting our indie friends.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone told us not to make the movie. So let's prove them wrong.
All right.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week, folks.
With the holidays approaching, I'd like to remind you that I released a new book this year for film buffs. It's called Hooked on Hollywood, Discoveries from a Lifetime of Film Fandom. In it, you'll find interviews I did with actors like Burgess Meredith and Joan Blondell, articles I wrote about the music of Casablanca and other unexplored topics, and lots of rare photos. You can purchase Hooked on Hollywood wherever you buy books, online or in person. I hope you or that special movie lover in your life will enjoy it.